Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. Today is a different time for my usual shows. My usual shows are on Tuesdays, 2 to 3 p.m., but today is a special show, so I hope you guys are doing well. I believe tomorrow is the last day of final exams at UBC, so good luck, everybody. I can see some students working here in the nest, and I believe that many of you guys are working hard wherever you are. So good luck. You guys only have maybe a couple more days. I believe tomorrow is the last one, but there might be some exceptions for some students. So good luck. I hope you guys can go through this with a strong, positive mind. And for today's show, I have a short story that I'd like to share with you guys, along with some songs. So let's get into this. But before we do, we'll get through some ads, some PSAs, and some show promos, and we'll get right into the show. So here we go.
This is Pure Dracula from MacLu, and you are tuned in to CITR Radio. 101.9 FM in Vancouver. CITR.ca.
If the news are getting you down or you're tired of scrolling on your phone, Massey Books is the one-stop shop for you. A 100% Indigenous-owned business that is committed to giving back to local charities, community initiatives, and organizations, Massey Books has a vast selection of rare and unique books, as well as a diverse range of books that are from underrepresented authors. You can shop online at masseybooks.com or visit their store on 229 East Georgia Street in Chinatown. They are open 7 days a week from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Wednesday to Saturday and 12 to 5 from Sunday to Tuesday. Their friendly staff would love to give you a hand to find your new favorite read. Are you looking to decolonize your self-care routine? Take a trip down to Sisters Sage for a variety of handmade soaps, bath fizzies, smudge sprays, and salves infused with traditional plant medicines. Sister Sage is an award-winning local Indigenous business run by Tsimshian entrepreneur, activist, and community builder Lynn Marie Angus and her dog TJ. Passionate about crafting wellness products that are respectful of the land we live on, Sister Sage is committed to a heart-centered approach to self-care as well as our collective healing. Located on 1312 Kingsway, you can drop by from Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See you there.
University life can get tough, and sometimes you just need to talk. Well, the good news is that all UBC students have access to drop-in single-session counseling, a 50-minute appointment with a registered mental health provider. No ongoing commitment, just support when you need it. Call the number 604-822-3811 to book your session. But if you're concerned about fitting mental health support into your schedule, Here to Talk, spelled with the number 2, not the word, is here for you. It's a free confidential 24/7 mental health counseling service available to all students attending post-secondary institutions in BC. To connect with a training counselor, search Here to Talk online and click the first link. Tap Get Started Today or use the phone numbers provided in the website appropriate to your geographic location. You can also download Here to Talk app on the Apple Store or Google Play by simply searching up Here to Talk. Don't wait to reach out, whether it's a quick session or 24/7 support.
For the best in funk, soul, surf, and more music, tune in to Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show. Wednesday mornings from 8 to 10 at CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver. Add us on Twitter at Jack Velvet Radio. Jack Velvet's Suburban Jungle Show. Also available streaming and podcast at jackvelvet.net.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Jeff, and welcome back to another episode of Lean In with Jeff. I hope you guys are having a wonderful morning. The weather has been great lately, which is awesome, because I think for the past couple weeks, at least up until the early April time, it was raining quite a bit, but it seems that the weather is now getting warmer. But still pretty cold outside as well, so I think a hoodie would be suffice in terms of being warm and really enjoying the weather. So like I mentioned, today's episode, I will be sharing one of my stories, one of the stories that I've written throughout the year. Pretty new, I'd say, because although it is following the fictional story route in terms of genre, I do deal with a more different theme of nostalgia, memory, and I guess childhood type of vibe. And so I just thought it would be a great way to read this and share with this with you guys. But before we do that, let's get through one song that I've prepared, a couple more throughout the episode as well. But it's a song called Rock and Roll Revival by Loverboy. So we'll get through this and we'll get back. That was Rock and Roll Revival by Loverboy. We'll get right into reading my short story. So the story I've written and will be sharing for you guys today is called Core Memory. And it is about a middle-aged man who works at a construction site. He's mainly an inspector. So when a project is close to done in terms of being constructed, he would go and inspect everything and see if everything's aligned, no issues. Kind of the final checkup is done by him. His name is Oren, and the story follows him going to a regular construction site, this one particularly being a water park. And through this project, it sparks memories about his father and the memories that he had, and kind of a reflective, he goes into this this phase of reflection in terms of his childhood and all these different emotions that go through it. And so it follows those themes of nostalgia, childhood, memory, and grief, as well as kind of accepting the presence and how time passes and you just have to move on. So here we go. All right, next up, Oren. My supervisor's voice sliced through the quiet chatter of the office, sharp and expectant. I turned just in time to catch the rolled blueprint he tossed my way. As I steadied the bundle, my gaze landed on the title stamped across its surface, Water Park. I immediately felt the corners of my mouth curl into a smile, subtle at first, then spreading like ink on paper. The blueprint's smooth, slightly stiff parchment absorbed the dampness of my eager grip. Normally, I'd flick off the rubber band without a second thought, let the paper snap open, and dive straight into the details. But this time, I hesitated. I cradled the roll in both hands as if cradling a newborn letter. As I slowly peeled away the first rubber band, a familiar tension prickled in my palm, a restless thrill unwrapping a birthday present or peeling the foil from a chocolate coin as a kid. As I removed the second rubber band and spread the blueprint open on the table, my eyes carefully traced its lines and symbols, absorbing every detail of the water park's final design. Without thinking, I ran my fingertips across the ink curves, brushed them gently the way I used to pet my dog Doug, my old cheap speak retriever, Chesapeake. For a moment, I could almost hear the distant shrieks of laughter that would fill the air once the park opened. I carefully rolled up the blueprint and tucked it into the worn pocket of my faded burlap backpack. The brass button, etched with my initials, clicked into place as I fastened it securely. As I turned the key in the ignition and the engine hummed to life, a smirk crossed my face, driven by the strange anticipation stirred beneath my skin. A post-build inspection at a construction site was usually just another routine task for me, especially with only two items on my checklist today. But instead of feeling a sense of normalcy and calmness, I was continuously met with an electric buzz of excitement, the same thrill I'd felt as a kid when my dad and I packed for a day at the water park. The plasticky scent of damp pool floats, the metallic rattle of a towering slide staircase, and the hollow thunk of a body hitting the water all came rushing back. The park I'm inspecting today wasn't the same park from my childhood, but something about it sparked a quiet resonance, a pull that I couldn't quite place. As I began driving toward the construction site, I could feel my mind racing ahead, already sketching out the scene before my eyes could confirm it. The nearer I got to the site, the more I imagined the fine mist of the water hoses arching over the pavement, the rhythmic sputter of fountains as they pulsed and danced. The platform stretched high, railings jutting out like quiet sentinels, while the gravel paths shifted with a slow undulation beneath the weight of the air. But the image in my mind was not just of this sight. It was the ghost of another, the one from my childhood, the one where summer days felt like they could stretch forever, and everything was bathed in the warm haze of an endless afternoon. The sky seemed impossibly wide, the sun too bright. The air was heavy and suffocating, clinging to your skin like syrup. It felt as if time had melted into the heat, stretching every second into a slow, languid pause. The grass felt softer underfoot, and the sound of crickets was a constant hum that seemed to vibrate through the air, buzzing just above my head. The desperate search for shade, darting from tree to tree, waiting for the breeze that never quite came. When it did arrive, it was nothing more than a fleeting flutter through the leaves, enough to make that sweat on my skin shimmer for a moment, but never enough to truly cool me down. As my patience thinned, my foot pressed heavier against the gas pedal. The car surged forward, and in that moment, another memory resurfaced like a forgotten photograph suddenly brought into focus. The locker room of Wavecrest Water Park, 20 years ago, just a short walk from our old apartment on Highland Creek A Avenue. The air was laden with moisture, tinged with the scent of chlorine and sunscreen-soaked towels, curling into every corner like steam in a closed shower. I was always the first to get ready, peeling off my favorite cerulean sun-bleached tie-dye t-shirt and letting it crumble onto the wet tile floor without care. The swim trunks, sporting a frayed hole on the right leg, a souvenir from last summer when they got snagged on a low-hanging branch, clung to my legs as I ran out barefoot. Dad was never far behind, but always a beat too slow. And when he finally did start chasing after me, I'd hear the familiar bellow, Orin. Looking back, I'd see him hurrying to catch up, one sock still clinging stubbornly to his left foot, half on, half off, like he hadn't quite finished getting ready. In one hand, he gripped his old metal thermos, its surface dull with scratches and dents, flecks of sawdust still caught in the grooves of the lid. His other hand would always find my arm at the last second, a firm but gentle grasp, pulling me back just before I could dart into the water. "Orin, slow down, buddy. The park isn't going anywhere. You haven't even put on sunscreen yet." He'd set me down on the worn wooden bench in the locker room, the cool rough green pressing against my legs. And with careful hands, he'd smooth the sunscreen over my face, telling me to close my eyes. As I did, I'd feel the warmth of his breath carrying the faint, familiar scent of his afternoon coffee. I can still smell it, the rich, nutty aroma of his Colombian roast, always in that same dented thermos, steam curling from the lid. He'd take a slow sip before nudging me toward the entrance, his hand resting lightly on my shoulder. "Don't run," he'd murmur, the words warm and composed hanging in the air between us. But I never listened. I never slowed down, and now, all these years later, I still wasn't slowing down. I turned the corner, pulling into the gravel lot. As I eased the car into park, I finally looked up. The sight stood about 20 feet ahead, framed by a loose ring of spindly sycamores, their skeletal branches tangled against the sky. The afternoon sunlight filtered through, weaving an intricate mosaic of orange and amber on the ground, its design constantly evolving. And there, rising through the trees, were the first glimpses of the park. The water hoses arched like painted rainbows. Their poles, painted in neon chartreuse and burnt tangerine, looked like something stretched in crayon, vivid, bold, and almost three-dimensional, as if ready to jump off the screen and into my eyes. I opened the door and stepped out of the car, pulling my toolkit from the trunk. As I walked toward the site, the sound of my boots against the gravel was sharp, etched step, each step like a crackling spark in the silence. I stopped for a moment, sliding my foot back and forth, scraping the bottom of my boot against the concrete. The screech echoed, a sound that made my skin tingle as the white marks were left behind. I stared at the marks for a moment, the simplicity of it all hitting me. I used to do this as a kid, find any patch of concrete and scrape my shoes, watching the pale streaks stretch across the ground. The uneven texture of concrete, with its mix of rough, jagged stones, the high-pitched rasp of rubber against it, and the cold, unyielding pressure beneath my foot, had always intrigued me. I would kick small pebbles and watch them bounce and roll, imagining little races across the pavement. But what stands out most isn't the rocks or the concrete, it's Dad. He'd reach for my arm, his calloused thumbs and hands dry and grainy, gently pulling me away from my game. Before I knew it, I'd be perched on his knee, a rock held inches from my face. "You know what this is?" he'd ask, his brow slightly raised and his lips pressed together like he was holding back a smile. As Dad began to explain the rock details, I'd nod along as if I understood. but his words would slip away from me, the details blurring into a dull murmur. Another lecture about minerals and formations that I never really grasped and found hard to care about. But what I do remember, the part that lingers, are the dust-speckled strands of his dark, graying hair and the tired red lines streaking the whites of his eyes. I never asked him much about his passion for petrology, never thought to, really. But I know he loved it, just as much as he loved sharing it with me in those small, fleeting moments. And somehow, I miss those explanations. I even miss pretending to listen. As I walked over to the water park, the air was saturated with the scent of fresh paint. I walked under the yellow caution tape, the plastic rustled by the wind as it fluttered around me. I slipped my latex glove and made my way to the equipment shed. I began with checking the water levels. I turned on the hose and grasped my pH meter and pulled out the small vial to fill the water. The cold, crisp touch of the water against my fingertips made the sweat on my brow feel a little heavier. And I watched closely as the meter dipped into the liquid, the digital display flashing with its results. As I finished the check, I moved on to the slides. I began with the twisting cobalt blue slide, as I used to call twisties as a kid. I crouched down to examine the bolts on the metal frame that supported the slide. As I tightened the loose bolt, my hand slipped. My fingers missed the target and the wrench scraped across the metal, causing me to lose my grip for a second. The tip of my finger caught the edge of the bolt and a small cut opened up. I cursed under my breath, feeling the sting bloom instantly. I walked over to my toolkit and dug through it, pulled out a roll of tape to wrap around my finger. The blood was minimal, but it still stung, and the tightness of the wrap didn't do much to ease the tension in my chest. I sat down on the water-slicked bench, shaped like a giant rubber duck with a goofy grin. As I smirked at the absurdity of it all and pressed the tape into place, I found myself thinking about another summer, one thick with the cedar shavings and the thick humid air of the riverbank. It was just after sixth grade when my friends and I signed up for the Fraser Canoe Competition and decided to build our own boats. Dad and I finally got our hands on the black walnut wood we've been chasing for weeks. He helped me shape the frame. He was a carpenter after all, and most of what I knew about tools came from those long, quiet hours working beside him. It was the last day of building, the final touches. We were screwing in the last parts of the canoe, the sun burning down, sweat sticking my hair to my forehead. But then disaster. My dad missed the mark with the drill, his hand slipping and the tip of the drill bit collided with the tip of his ring finger. The cut was small but deep enough to draw blood. I remember panicking, my face suddenly flushed with the searing heat of anxiety as I watched the blood pool around his finger. His usually collected face twisted, his left eye squinting in pain. Dad, what are we going to do? Are you okay? Can we still finish the canoe in time? My words rushed out, laced with urgency, and I couldn't hold back. Only 2 days remained before the competition. Dad, ever calm, took a slow breath. He reached for the first aid kit, his hand shaking just slightly. He wrapped a strip of tape around the wound with one hand, the other pressing against his palm. Then he looked up at me, smiling through the pain, and gently wiped a tear from my cheek with his rough, calloused thumb. "You're going to be okay, buddy," he reassured, his voice untouched by worry. I remember calming not from his words or the rough, familiar drag of his hands, but the quiet strength in his arms pulling me close, like the weight of a slow-moving tide, steady as carved wood. Believe it or not, Oren, this is going to be a core memory. I never really understood why Dad always said that every time I was frustrated or angry, whether at him or at things that happened at school. At the time, I couldn't imagine how I would ever look back and find meaning in those moments. But now, I think I get it. Those were the moments that helped shape who I am, the things I didn't learn in school, but the lessons that built the foundation of me. They were lessons in patience, in craftsmanship, and in life. I finished wrapping my finger and moved on to the drill, my sharp focus as I lined up the hole. But something shifted, a lump forming in my throat. I felt the familiar weight of grief push down on me. I could feel my nose getting stuffy, the tears creeping down my face before I even realized they were there. My vision blurred, the ground slipping in and out of focus. The tears kept coming like dandelion seeds whisked into the wind, directionless and endless. It had been 7 years since my dad passed away, and as much as I thought working in the same field might somehow keep him close, keep his memory alive in the whir of a drill or the smell of fresh cut wood, but it still wasn't enough. It didn't fill the void he left. I didn't know what would. I set the drill aside and stretched out on the ground, the cool, rough dirt pressing against my back as I stared up at the sky. The breeze tugged at the hem of my shirt, the damp fabric clinging onto the sweat on my neck. I could feel the moisture from the soil creeping into my shirt, the dampness spreading across my back, but it didn't bother me. I just breathed, slow and grounded, gradually letting my eye close shut. The sound of the wind, stirring the branches and making the leaves whisper against each other, took me back to those long afternoons in the backyard as a kid. I'd lie there, the grass prickling at my legs, the sun pressing into my face. Dad would come outside and settle beside me, without a word, his body sinking into the earth with the same slow ease as mine. He'd stretch his legs out, crossing them at the ankles, his breath balanced and quiet, and for a while we'd just lie there, staring at the sky, watching the clouds shift and stretch, the wind nudging them along like slow-moving waves. The air smelled like cut grass and warm soil, and every so often, a bird would call out, its voice sharp against the hush of the afternoon. After a few minutes, he'd always ask, soft but certain, "You okay?" I asked with a quiet tilt of my head, a movement so small it barely disturbed the stillness between us. He never pressed for more. He just let the silence stretch, comfortable and full, like it was enough just to be there. I could still hear his voice in my mind, as clear as if he were standing beside me. "You okay? Sir, you okay? Sir?" I opened my eyes and I turned toward the voice. I saw a man standing a few feet away, his hand resting on the shoulder of a small boy. The kid clutched a bright blue Nerf Super Soaker. His fingers tightened along around the handle like he was still hoping for a battle that wasn't coming. The oversized nozzle pointed toward, full of restless energy with nowhere to go. The father met my eyes with his friendly, almost apologetic smile. "Are you okay?" "Yeah, I'm fine," I said, wiping the tears off my face with the back of my hand. The father hesitated before clearing his throat. "Do you know when you guys are opening?" I finished drilling the last loose end in place, then stood and dusted my palms off my jeans. "Probably about a week. You guys like water parks?" The father chuckled, shaking his head. "Oh, he loves them," he said, nodding toward his son. "Been talking about this all week. Even brought his water gun, thinking he'd get to try it out today." I glanced at the boy, who was still half hiding beneath his dad, his lip caught between his teeth. His eyes, wide and glossy, stared at the empty park like it had personally betrayed him. He sniffled and wiped his nose on his sleeve, trying to pretend he wasn't upset. I crouched down slightly, giving him a small, knowing nod. "It'll be open soon, buddy. You bring that thing back next week and I bet you'll be the first one to soak somebody." His grip on the water gun twitched slightly, like he wanted to believe me but couldn't quite shake the weight of disappointment yet. The father sighed and patted his son's back. "Hey, buddy, we could do something else. Maybe the arcade or get ice cream." The boy didn't answer. He just pressed his face slightly against his dad's sleeve, shaking his head. The dad exhaled, rubbing his temple. "You know, I try to get him into other stuff," he said, glancing at me with a half smile, half sigh. "Trains, for example. I work with them. Thought maybe he'd find them interesting. But no. Only water parks." I smiled. "Can't blame him. Water parks are pretty great." "Yeah, but I just wonder sometimes if I should be pushing him more, getting him into other things, helping him see past just one interest. I don't know. Maybe I'm doing this wrong. I glanced at the boy, still gripping his water gun like a lifeline, then back at the father, his expression burdened by the uncertainty of trying to be the best parent he could. You're not doing it wrong. He'll appreciate it one day, and even if he doesn't get into trains, he'll remember that you tried and that you cared. The father gave a small skeptical laugh. You really think so? Yeah. Everything you do, every small moment, it all becomes a part of him. A core memory. He tilted his head. Core memory? I shrugged. Just a memory he'll have of you. So you don't think what you're doing is wrong or doesn't matter. It does. The father looked at me for a long time, then down at his son, ruffling his hair absentmindedly. Thanks, but we better get going then. I stepped back, giving him space as I headed to my truck. Tossing my gear into the back trunk, before I climbed in, I glanced over one last time. The boy had shifted closer to his dad, their shadows stretching long in the late afternoon light. The father was crouching now, talking softly, probably offering some compromise, a different plan, something to look forward to. The boy, still disappointed, had his head turned away from his father. I knew that in a few years, the kid might not remember this day in detail, but he'd remember the feeling. He'd remember his dad being there, trying, offering, waiting. Even in his uncertainty, the father was giving him something that would last. As I closed the truck door, silence felt like a heavy blanket. I miss Dad. I just wish I told him thank you for everything. The core memories we shared are still with me, and they are the reason I am who I am today. That is it for today's storytelling. This story is called Core Memory. And I had a lot of fun writing this story. There's a lot of creative elements that I incorporated with this specific theme of memory, nostalgia, reflection, and grief, and how this character is able to go back in time mentally and really reflect on the experiences that he remembers with his dad, who has unfortunately passed away. So I hope you guys enjoyed this story and really just, I hope it gave you a chance to reflect on your own memories. And it doesn't need to be about grief or sadness, but, you know, all those happy memories that we all have. And I really think that's the beauty of being able to experience the past, is that it's not sad because that moment is over, but it's special because we're able to remember it. And that memory can last for an infinite amount of time. And I honestly don't think that there's anything more valuable than to have those sorts of memories with you. And I hope you guys are able to create a lot of those memories this summer with your friends, your family, and whoever you want to spend time with. So yeah, I just want to leave it at that. And for the rest of my show, I have a couple more songs that I've prepared for you all. So without further ado, let's get through some of those songs. It will be a continuation of the band called Lover Boy. The first song that I had was more of a rock and roll vibe, and I believe that some other songs will possibly contain some of those similar vibe songs as well. The next song I have for you guys is called No Tomorrow. Really like this title because I think it's a great mentality to have, is to think that tomorrow is not going to come, so make the fullest of today. So here we go.
Too many nights alone. Got a leaving boots on,
Left a ring on the table by the telephone. Three words, please don't call. And now she's sleeping on the night train, trying to make the jet plane. It's gonna take her far away. And she knows that when the sun rises, no lies and no disguises, just a second chance at a new day.
That was No Tomorrow by The Loverboy. The next song I have for you guys is called Heartbreaker, same band, and I hope you guys enjoy this song as well. So here we go. All right, that was Heartbreaker by Loverboy. The last song I have for you guys is called Working for the Weekend. So here we go.
I'm not afraid to die.
That was Working for the Weekend by Lover Boy. That is it for today's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. The weather is amazing outside today, so I really hope you guys make some time to go outside and enjoy the weather, taking a break from studying and just smelling the fresh air. Good luck, everybody, for finals, with finals, and I really hope that everyone can get through this successfully. And like I said, summer is very close, so use that as motivation, and I will see you all next week, Tuesday at 3 p.m., 2 p.m. So I hope you guys have a wonderful afternoon. Goodbye, everybody.
Catching your eye, averting my gaze, crossing the street. Stay up at night, thinking about it, grinding my teeth. Wake up at three in cold sweats, and can't fall back asleep. I could set a fire that melts off in my heat. I'm not lost at sea. This town in the
I'm Walter Cronkite. I'd like you to hear something. They're radio fans, amateurs, giving of their own time and spending their own money.
CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Your volunteer-run station.
They're just two average guys who saw the need and volunteered.
Says they love me, but I don't know why.
Hello, this is Evan Che from Montreal, Quebec, and you're listening to UBC Radio CITR 101.9 FM, Vancouver.
Wish I could sleep.